You're listening to the Modern Web Podcast. For more podcasts, videos, and events, find us online at modern-web.org or follow us on Twitter at modern.web. That's modern.web. This podcast is sponsored by This.Labs, a framework agnostic consultancy that specializes in JavaScript. You can find them at this.co/labs. That's THISDOT.co/labs.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Modern Web Podcast. My name is Nicolina Huebner, and I will be your co-host today, along with Jen Luker. I am a software engineer at Google Fiber, and Jen is a lead software engineer at Deseret Digital Media and an accessibility queen. You can find us both on Twitter at NicolinaSon and Jen at KnitCodeMonkey. Today, we have Rachel Andrew joining us today to talk about CSS Grid. Rachel Andrew is a legend in the CSS field. She is a web developer, author, speaker, CSS working group invited expert, Smashing Mag editor-in-chief, and managing director and founder of the web development edgeofmyseat.com. Rachel, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for inviting me on. It's good to be here.
Rachel, unbeknownst to you, I'm sure, you were one of my first mentors and role models for me when I first entered the field not that long ago. I saw you at an O'Reilly conference in San Jose, and you just taught with such clarity and direction that, like, it helped me feel like I too could accomplish my goals. And so it's really such a personal fulfillment of my own dreams in this this field to be able to meet you. So thank you again for being here.
Oh, thank you. It's really nice to hear that people have found the stuff I'm doing useful as well. That's really great.
You know, more than useful, it's when we've been looking at the evolution of the technologies being used on the web, we have JavaScript that's been going very widely into different frameworks and libraries that have been making it much clearer. We've really been missing that with CSS. And we have Flexbox, which really helped with a lot of our floats, but CSS Grid is really solving our issues with media queries and, you know, other layout problems that we've always fought with. So the fact that you're spearheading the ability to make that simpler and more formulaic has been amazing. And for my fangirl moment, it's been really nice seeing someone who's not 25 spearheading thing. I'm 36 and going into that, you know, second decade of my career. And it's really great seeing other women that are still in the field and still pushing forward and still at the forefront. And it just gives me hope. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Yes. Yeah, so I'm 42. I've been doing this for about 20 years, which I like to say on stage that I predate CSS because I do. When I started doing this, CSS wasn't really a thing. It certainly wasn't a thing in browsers. So I've kind of grown up with all of this, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I have too. I've been coding for, I don't know, 25 years, but, you know, professionally it's only been 10. But yeah, I totally remember pre-CSS. I remember when the web was still, you know, using Telnet pre, you know, modems. So it was, it's been an amazing ride, and it's been super cool how it's evolved. So to get started, tell us a little bit how you got started in CSS Grid.
Yeah, so this goes back a very long way, really, because I think it was 2011, maybe beginning of 2012, I was speaking at a conference in France, and Bert Boss from the CSS Working Group was also there, and he led a workshop in French about new layout stuff, and a lot of that was really about using CSS for print rather than actually for output to the web. But one of the things he demonstrated was a sort of early form of the grid spec. And I thought, this is excellent. This is exactly what we need. And then I sort of, you know, looked into this a bit more and discovered that Microsoft were implementing the sort of early stage spec into IE10. And so I had something I could play with. And so I started building some examples using that Microsoft, that sort of initial grid spec, really. So that would be in sort of 2012. And so I've been involved since then, really, because I kind of recognized at that point that this was really important. And I know that new things kind of need a cheerleader sometimes. They need someone to start saying, hey, look at this. It's really great. Let's talk about it and try and make sure that people, that browser vendors really, and the CSS working group knew that it was something that developers wanted. So I kind of took it upon myself to be a bit of a grid cheerleader, really, and keep it in the public eye, particularly because it was coming from Microsoft. And at the time, you know, we're still very burnt by IE6 hanging around, and maybe weren't very positive about something that Microsoft was doing. And so I wanted to be an independent person saying, this is a really cool thing. And we should, as a development community, we should care about it.
Yeah. Very cool. In the book that you write, The New CSS Layout, you preface a lot of the material by giving a background on CSS. Could you give us a brief history, because there's a lot there, which I highly encourage everyone listening to go read the book. But could you give us a brief history of CSS and how we got to this point with CSS Grid being the powerful tool that it is?
Yeah, I think because we came from this sort of idea of using tables for layout because we didn't have anything else. You know, when I started building websites, there wasn't CSS. So we were sort of chopping up designs and then fitting them into table cells to try and essentially recreate often what was like a brochure or something on the web. You know, we were just trying to reconstruct that in a web way. And then once we got CSS, some sort of CSS that we could use for positioning, so the positioning stuff and floats as well, we sort of began doing these layouts using CSS, which ended up with things becoming quite simple. I think the limited tools we had really kind of affected the look of websites, and we went from these very very graphical, you know, chopped up images all positioned in cells to a much simpler look for a lot of websites, which I think really carried right through into the things that we see, you know, built with Bootstrap, and people like to say, oh, you know, which layout are you building today, this one or this one, because people are using Bootstrap. And I think a lot of that is this technical limitation that we had, that we sort of had floats which always kind of rise up and you can't control white space very well, that sort of dictated the way the web looked. And the fact that we now have layout methods, you know, both with Flexbox and Grid kind of working together, that give items in the layout relationship to each other is the key thing. Because then we can say, well, you know, I want this thing to be two rows down and there to be white space here, which we just couldn't do before. And so I think that in terms of the evolution of what we're doing with web design, we can actually start to leave that technical limitation behind and say, well, what is real design for the web, that's for the web and that uses these tools, as opposed to the early stuff, which was just trying to mimic print design, really. We were just taking our print things and chopping them up. And then this sort of the kind of simple designs we've had to do because of the technical limitation. And it's like, well, what's next? What's coming now? Because we've got these new tools.
Yeah, reading or listening to you and reading the book was a profound realization for me, because I, as a consumer of the web, hadn't realized how cookie cutter the design really was, and the endless possibilities that are opened up when you do have the capability to create white space and move things around in a flexible way, especially in a responsive way, so things can look different on different screens. And so it was a moment where I had to like step back and think about like the just the design possibilities that CSS Grid really does enable.
Yeah, I think it's a really good time for people just to look again, really, at what is possible. When I speak to people who are more designers, more on the design side of things, and maybe don't do a huge amount of front end development themselves, they've got all sorts of, oh, you can't do this. So they'll know that, oh, we don't know how tall things are. We can't line these two boxes up very easily. Because they've been told this by developers they've been working with. And so I think it's a really good time for people who are more on that design side to get to look at what we've now got and realize that some of those limitations have gone. And that'll take a bit longer than it will for developers to embrace it, because as developers, we're used to learning new things and tend to be excited about new things and like playing around with them. But that's then got to filter down to the people who are designing and maybe not doing so much development and have got all of these sort of truths that they understand about how the web works that now perhaps aren't true anymore. And that's going to take a little bit of time, I think, before we start to see some really interesting stuff coming from people who, you know, aren't the early adopting coders that jump on this stuff straight away.
And yeah. I do feel like some of that lands with the developers to educate the designers as well. Mm. We educated them originally to have these limitations. And now that we have these new tools, to us to try to express and share that the limitations no longer exist.
I think one way to do that is things like the tools that are in Firefox developer tools, a brilliant way to show to someone who is less technical, you know, on the design side, what's actually possible, because they can open up that panel and they can start moving things around, and very simply with Grid, you know, much more simply than if you've got a floated layout and if you move one thing, everything blows up. So I think actually introducing designers to the fact that those tools exist, and yes, they're called developer tools, but there's an awful lot of design stuff in there, and Firefox are really leading the way with that, creating really good tools for people to use to actually, you know, they're building stuff for shapes at the moment, you know, we can actually draw the shape and so on. I think it's that stuff helps people who maybe wouldn't see themselves as developers understand this stuff actually isn't that hard and that they can play around with it.
That's a very fantastic point. So moving on with that, we have been getting a lot of support and adoption of CSS Grid across the browsers. We do have a couple that we still don't have, don't we?
Pretty much with modern browsers. I think even UC Browser, which is used a lot in India and places, it now has updated to a version of Chrome, which has of Blink, which has Grid support. So I think most of the major browsers actually do have support now. Obviously, that doesn't include people who are stuck on i10 and 11 who have support for the older spec and not the new spec at this point. So, but yeah, we've got very good support. For people who are using a modern browser, they've probably got Grid support. And Grid support is becoming comparable to Flexbox support, really, you know, other than those old IEs, really.
So with the old IEs, we are looking at needing CSS fallbacks for those. For instance, do you have any other recommendations, or why don't we have a polyfill to handle it?
Right, well, you don't want to polyfill something like Grid, because to actually do that, you'd have to be doing an awful lot of work in JavaScript to kind of work out the heights of things. If you ever see anyone using JavaScript to create sort of equal height boxes and they've got a reasonable amount of content, it becomes incredibly slow. It's just a expensive thing to do in JavaScript. So to try and replicate everything that Grid does using JavaScript on top of floats or what have you would just be horrible. You know, it would just be incredibly janky and nasty. So you just don't want to do that. Because as well, the browsers that don't have Grid support at this point are probably, you know, older browsers, possibly on older machines. You know, they're going to be the ones that suffer the most from having all this extra stuff loaded in. So really the best approach is to use the fact that Grid overwrites older CSS very well, and the fact we have things like feature queries, so we can sort of do, you know, we can detect in CSS whether the browser you're using supports CSS Grid, and only do CSS Grid stuff if you know you've got support, which means you can essentially create fallbacks and then just overwrite them with CSS. And that works very well, and that's sort of what I'm doing in production. A lot of people are doing it in production. And it means that you're not having to load in a load of extra stuff. You know, it's often just a few lines of CSS to create your Grid version on top of what you've got for non-Grid browsers. It's not adding a whole lot of stuff. Whereas if you start to bring JavaScript into the picture to polyfill, it's going to be janky. It's really not going to be a good idea.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And I one of the blogs that I read that you wrote about was giving advice to developers that are trying to convince their leads or their non-developer superiors to integrate Grid, even though there are these compatibility obstacles that you provide many tools to overcome. Do you have any other suggestions on how to maybe convince your team to get on board with the CSS grid train?
I think really with any new CSS, and particularly with grid, you know, it's that performance angle is a very good one to go for. You know, saying that you can build very complex layouts and do things that were just incredibly difficult to do with previous layout methods. It's going to save a huge amount of time if you're working with something like grid, you know, not trying to sort of figuring out why things are floating in weird places or what have you. So it's kind of that. It's kind of making the case for this being, you know, a future-proof way of working. This is the future. The other things are very much the past and are going to be going away, and there are going to be fewer and fewer browsers you need to worry about there anyway. So it's kind of, you save a lot of time. You can do things you couldn't do otherwise by using grid. And because, you know, the amount of code you actually need to do a complex layout in CSS grid is tiny. So that's really going to help with, you know, the whole performance thing, you know, not loading in a ton of stuff, not loading in a big CSS framework when all you need is the grid, which is, you know, is something that people were doing. So I think there's just a lot of benefits. And because it's so well supported and the support in the modern browsers is very, very good. I've got a grid bug site where I log any bugs that people find in implementations, and there's actually very few logged, and most of them are pretty edge casey. You know, you've got to be doing something fairly unusual to run into problems at this point. So support is great, and I think, you know, if you're happy to use Flexbox, you probably ought to be happy to use grid at this point. And just, you know, understand how you can create those fallbacks sort of fairly easily for older things. And don't worry about the fact that things don't look identical in all browsers, because they don't look the same on a phone and the desktop, and you don't worry about that. So, you know, if you've got a limited browser, then serve it a slightly more limited layout. That's fine.
Yeah, that's such an excellent point. I think it's something that I think people inherently are on board with, but really needs to be articulated. And especially in the age where we're coming from, where there's so many libraries and frameworks that we're dependent on, and there's a way of expecting things to look and behave, it's very helpful to, it's a monumental shift that will change the way that we interact with CSS, but being able to just like help everyone get there, I think is instrumental in that transition.
Yeah, I think there are quite a few sort of shifts in thinking. I mean, it's so hard for me because I've been working with this now for so long, you know, and everybody else has maybe been working with it for a year at this point. And there, you know, there are a couple of things. The way things are sized is quite different, and I've written about that. And the fact that, you know, grid cares about writing mode, so we don't talk about left and right and top and bottom. We talk about start and end, and that's a little bit confusing at first if you're used to thinking about things being left and right. So I think there are things that there are kind of concepts in new layout that need understanding, which is really what I was doing with the book, was trying to explain some of those concepts that are important. But once you've sort of moved to thinking in that way, I think it's fairly straightforward. And interestingly, when I'm teaching this in a workshop situation, if I've got brand new developers, as in people who've got no baggage of using floats to do layout and so on, they pick up grid so quickly. You know, they're away, they're building things in no time. And it's all the people with 5-10 years experience are puzzled, because they're trying to build it on top of what they already know.
Yeah. It's a fascinating thing to observe, just how we're conditioned and how it affects our learning.
Something that I've been thinking about, a little bit of an epiphany, if you will, is that we've been, as JavaScript developers, shifting more and more into like CSS and JS frameworks to try to style our components. And I kind of came to the realization that you could still have the global CSS be laid out essentially in grid. And then within each box itself, you'd have a component that could then be run on its own with CSS and JS components. And though that seems like really obvious, it was something that I hadn't really thought about. It seems like the thought process behind it is either you have everything in CSS and JS, or you have everything in global scope. But being able to divide those and have a grid global scope for your page layout, and then having the CSS and JS in your components, really kind of excites me, the idea that we could control our layouts in two different realms is really exciting.
Yeah, I think in some ways we're just figuring out how we're going to use this. You know, there's not many people really have used Grid in, you know, in really big sites on. So there's people who've sort of implemented bits and pieces on larger sites already. You know, they've added some components and things that are using Grid. But I think as teams start to develop new projects and really go for, you know, really adopt using Grid as their main layout method, I think then we'll start to see different ways of working with it. And that's going to be really interesting. I'm kind of eagerly looking out for that sort of stuff and seeing what people do with it.
It's going to be very exciting. Mm-hmm. Something that's fascinating about Grid is the ability to no longer follow a linear path through your code. You could take a code block that's at the top and position it in the bottom left, and you could take a code block that's at the bottom and put it at the top. And I wondered how that affects accessibility. For the most part, we run through our code through screen readers and the things by walking through from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, how do you think we should approach accessibility when using Grid layout?
Yeah, so this is kind of a bit of an issue, and it happens in other layout methods as well, but it's a lot harder to kind of jumble up the content with other layout methods. So it becomes a particular problem with Flexbox to a lesser extent and Grid particularly, in that we have this issue, yeah, of content reordering, and we can really cause a horrible mess. And you can do it for yourself quite easily by, jumbling up a bunch of Grid things, positioning them all over the place that have got links in, and then try and tab around the document. And you can see what happens because the logical order of the document, so the order which a screen reader or someone tabbing around, navigating with the keyboard, that's going to follow the document order. It's not going to follow the visual order, so where you've put the blocks. So you do need to be really careful when doing any kind of content reordering in any layout method, but particularly with Flexbox and Grid, that you don't kind of disconnect the visual display of things from the source. And certainly don't use Grid to avoid reordering your source. You know, if things are in the wrong order, do it in the source, not by moving things around visually. There are obviously reasons why it would be very nice to be able to shift things around, you know, at different breakpoints or what have you. You know, drop something down to the bottom on an hour breakpoint or whatever. And there are discussions being had about how we solve that. You know, how does a developer say, actually, can you please follow the visual order of this document and not the logical order, because that I think would be very useful. But at the moment, the best advice really is to not mess around with order too much. And if you do change the sort of move things out of their logical order, make sure that you can still sort of tab around the document or test it with a screen reader if possible. But a pretty good test is, can you, you know, move around between headings or move around between links in that document with a keyboard? And it still makes sense.
So if you're going to rearrange the code and you're not going to rearrange your source, make sure your tab indexes apply.
Yeah, it is really difficult. It's a bit like saying, oh, look, you can do this marvelous thing, but don't.
Yeah.
And we're aware of that in the CSS working group. And I think, yeah, it is a just, again, it you get more power as a developer. You get something that is really useful, and it then just gives you that another bit of responsibility to make sure that you're not doing anything horrendous that's going to cause people a problem. And I think that there will be more and more discussions about this, as time goes on and people start to pick out the problems and how we might be able to solve it. There's certainly ongoing discussions about that.
What excites you the most about Grid?
I think really at this point, seeing what people do with it, because there was, you know, sort of 4 or 5 years where I was, you know, really the only person. Maybe about 4 years I was the only person. Then Jen Simmons started talking about Grid as well. But really for a long time, it was just us just saying, this is cool, this is coming. And people saying, yeah, we'll have a look at it when it lands. So this year has been really interesting to see people start to use it. And of course, we've seen a lot of very basic examples. You know, everyone's written their grid tutorial where they're doing the few basic things you can do with grid, which is fine. Or they're doing little demos. But I think in the last couple of months, I've started to see more interesting things occur. And also this thing of people actually using grid in production rather than just building a demo or writing a tutorial. And it's that I think interests me, because I want to see what we need next. I mean, we've already got ideas. There's a grid level 2 draft has now been published, which is looking at subgrids, so the ability for things that aren't direct children to use the parent grid. And it's seeing what people are actually doing and what they need, what problems they then come back with. That's what I'm interested in, because that's what's going to give us the next levels of grid and of CSS layout in general. You know, what problems have we still got to solve? Because I like solving problems, and I find it interesting to be solving problems in CSS.
Awesome. Yeah, we really are on the cusp of something totally novel in a lot of ways. So to see what other people, like when they bring their expertise to that forefront, and what they offer up is, yeah, definitely something to look forward to.
So looking back before we look forward, how has your historical knowledge, being from before CSS, helped you in regards to pushing the industry into the future?
I think the main thing is, you know, we see all sorts of things happening on the web, you know, people sort of falling in love with certain frameworks or certain practices or processes, and you know, this is going to change everything. And I'm like, yeah, we've seen this before, you know, and yeah. It's kind of this understanding that there's this cycle that goes on. New people come into the industry and they think everything is terrible and they're going to change it. And so they're going to do these things. And a lot of the time they're, you know, solving problems that we've already discussed maybe 10 times before. But that's okay, because out of that, there are going to be some things which are actually genuinely new and useful, and or perhaps the technology has caught up to a point that we can do them. You know, we couldn't have done, you know, the grid layout spec or something like it. Bits of this spec have been around for years, you know, since 2005 or so. There have been these specs which are a bit like grid layout, but it just wasn't time. It wasn't a point at which, you know, the browsers could render this stuff fast enough and things like that. So everyone coming into the industry, you know, they come in new, they've got all these ideas. Some of them are things that all the old people are like, yeah, we've tried this, it doesn't work. But there will be stuff that bubbles up and can work. And to me, I think that's, you know, being able to take that view, being able to look at the excitement of new people and not try not to stamp on it, because they're new and they're enthusiastic. And just wait to see what out of that becomes useful. You know, what they're bringing to the conversation because of their, you know, new experiences and new eyes on it all. As I say, you know, new people to grid think very differently to sort of us old web developers looking at it. And so, yeah, I think that's probably why having seen these cycles over and over, you're able to take a step back and not jump in and immediately squash everybody. You know, you can just sort of wait and see what happens, really, and learn from it too.
I love the fact that you mentioned really early on this podcast the chopping up of images and putting them into tables to make a large image that had to, like, different locations in which you could click to go to different places. I still remember the old days of frame sets, and that was how we got dynamic websites, right? You know, that was the beginning of, oh my gosh, you don't have to code everything on every page every single time. And I have seen those cycles as we've gone through, and we've gone from, okay, well, we need CSS and everything needs to be one way, to now we're going down to responsive. So we're breaking down things again and making them all modular like we did before. And then, so it is really cool seeing those cycles happen. And every single time those cycles happen, something cool comes out of it and something new and something we wish we could have done back then.
Yeah.
It's very fun.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked a little bit about what you see in the future for the users of CSS and the opportunities that have yet to be seized by all of the people working in it. Are you able to give us a glimpse into what the CSS working group or, like, your inner circles foresee for the future of grid?
Yeah, so to say, we've got a grid level 2 spec, which was published as a sort of first published working draft, which is the kind of, you know, a brand new shiny spec. So that's the next level of grid. The main thing for that is this idea of subgrids, this idea of being able to have things further down the document structure actually participate in a grid, which is on a parent element, so maybe two levels up. Because at the moment, things have to be a direct child of the grid container to be on the grid, basically. And you can nest grids, but they're independent nested grids if you do that. So that's the thing that everyone's sort of very keen to solve. There's other stuff. You know, at the moment, you can't actually put a background or borders on a grid area itself. You've got to insert an element. And I think a lot of people would quite like to have some kind of like a pseudo element type thing, which allows you to do that without needing to stick in a redundant div to add a background color, for example. That's something. There's this sort of idea of like masonry-like layouts, which grid doesn't do, although people often think it does initially. And again, that's a type of layout that performs very badly when you do it with JavaScript. And, you know, could we do that? Could we make that better? So there's a whole bunch of things. Again, it all comes down to these problems that people are bringing up, because as they're starting to use grid in production, they're coming to the CSS working group and they're raising issues, which anyone can do. The CSS working group issues are all on GitHub, so you can go along there and you can comment on issues. You know, if you've got a really great use case for subgrid, you can go and add a comment, and you can also raise issues. And the discussion around the CSS working group looks very technical, but in general, if you turn up with a good use case and you explain it, you don't have to be super technical, just explain your use case and say, you know, I don't think we can do this yet with grid. People will be interested in that and will reply to you. And it may well end up being something that is discussed, because we're just trying to build the CSS that everyone needs. So knowing what people need is really important.
Do you think you could give us those links so that we can add them to the podcast? That would be really great for other people.
Yeah, I'll give you the links for all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, all of the work of the CSS working group does happen in the open. It does involve doing things like reading IRC logs. But more recently, we've started on the GitHub issues. If anything is discussed actually in one of our meetings, the IRC log gets paid for that part of the conversation, gets put against the GitHub issue. So you can see what's been discussed. If something that's a pet issue has come up, you can have a look. So I'll send through links for that, so you can add them to the notes.
That's really fantastic. I'd love to look at this.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This is such a wonderful start to getting involved with CSS Grid if you haven't already. And if you are in CSS Grid and you have ideas, please follow the links and just be a part of the community, because we're all eager to hear what everyone has to say. Thank you, Rachel and Jen, for joining today. And thank you for listening to the Modern Web Podcast. You can find us online at moderndotweb.com and on Twitter at modern.web. That's modern.web. Thank you, everyone, for joining. We will have links. Please tweet and follow and be part of the conversation. We would love to hear from you all.
Thank you again.